to episode 6 of Fire Pro Podcasting, the number one podcast where we ruin all the names of your favorite childhood wrestlers. I am your host. I am your host once again, Brad Arty, here, of course, with Dan. Dan Ford was just laughing there.
Howdy.
And Brian Rose is also here.
Is this the Bound for Glory episode that we're finally going to do?
Welcome to the special Bound for Glory episode, where we're going to learn everything about the wrestlers. We're all here, we got our sheer shuffles in, ready to see who will be world champion. Will it be, I don't even know who's in that match.
EC3,
will it be
Matt Hardy,
the guy, or will it be the other guy?
Matt Hardy and somebody else.
The
Drew McIntyre. Yeah. Triple threat match.
Internet. Sheer shuffles going everywhere, man. We're here, and it's a worldwide phenomenon. Employees are doing it. Other employees are doing it. It is the future of the wrestling world.
Infinite sensation.
It's a total sensation.
Oh, man, I've seen some of the videos. Oh, man, it's just awful. Speaking of, I don't want to say speaking of awful, but yesterday or Saturday, whenever you're watching this, listening to this, was the WWE host show, the Madison Square Garden show. I don't think, did it have a name?
Okay. Live at Madison Square Garden.
Madison Square Garden. It's Saturday night.
Sometimes it's good to keep it simple. Yeah, you can either watch that or see. I think Miley Cyrus was on this. Yeah, it was their special kind of host show thing with, of course, Brock Lesnar versus the Big Show. And Seth Rollins and John Cena in a cage match, which may or may not be John Cena's last match for X amount of time.
I think it's after Hell in a Cell.
Okay. So that kind of, you know, I didn't see all the show. I was actually out most of the night, but I did catch. I caught two matches. I caught the Lesnar match and the Jericho match that was there. Both of them were fairly short. There's not too much to talk about outside of that, the undercard there, but let's kind of just go right to it. What did you guys think of the Big Show Brock Lesnar match?
It was okay for what it was. I mean, it was just a Big Show being a giant and doing all these giant spots with Brock Lesnar for a few minutes. Brock Lesnar came back, botched an F5, then pelted him with German suplexes, then pinned him with an F5. And it was what it needed to be. I didn't think it needed to be like this long match. It was suited to get Brock Lesnar over and did its job. Yeah.
Yeah. If you saw the Beast in the East match with Kofi, it was that, but with a very fat giant man instead of Kofi getting thrown out.
Yes.
Yeah. It was a 4-minute squash. Big Show got a big move in early where he sort of did this weird power bomb-y thing over the top rope. And
yeah, like the first move.
Yeah, it that was like a Brock Lesnar shot in for a double leg, and Big Show just sort of power bombed him out of the ring, which was pretty cool. But then it was just all Brock just suplexing and slamming him. And did an attitude adjustment accidentally because he couldn't F5 the first time he went for it. I mean, it was what it was. I there's been some people talking about, oh my god, the Big Show in a match. Who are you gonna sacrifice in a 4-minute squash? Like, oh man, let's send Cesaro out there. Like, well, that would have made everybody even madder.
Yeah, because it wouldn't have been 4 minutes.
I mean, it would have been three. It would have been 2.5, and it'd just been a grab slam match.
Yeah. Over.
So, this was the right guy to do it because it looked impressive with like the big giant guy getting slammed by Brock Lesnar. It's fun. It's always fun to see Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. I think that's kind of why they booked it. I mean, like, it was fun. I thought the video package, which they're normally really good at anyway, so it's not really saying anything crazy here, but I thought the video package they showed before, which kind of said, you know, like, with the Big Show, I thought it worked really well. And I think, you know, a lot of it, like, there's been a lot of talk about Big Show and Kane, which we'll get to a little bit later, but we can almost go over Big Show now. There's been a lot of comments about them kind of being the poster boys of what's wrong with the current booking. And yeah. I don't totally disagree with that. I think a lot of it is just, it's not like their fault. I think, I say that more about Kane than I do with Big Show. Big Show's gotten a lot slower, but, you know, a man of his size probably wouldn't be supposed to live as long as he was. So I think he's still doing well. I think these kind of matches work well, but I think you'd almost be better off if these matches were the things that happened, but he's on the show every week. And I think that's what kind of hurts it. And it's more, like, I don't hate Big Show and Kane, but I do dislike what they represent, which is kind of same old, same old.
Yeah, their refusal to make new stars. They're more inclined of giving Big Show and Kane new pushes than pushing anybody else. And
I wouldn't really call it a push, though. I mean, they're just using them. I think Vince knows that they're established names and they can wrestle, but...
Well, I mean, Kane's getting the title shot at the end of this month, so...
Yeah, but he should have
win.
No, I hope not.
Like, I've heard people complaining about Kane. They built up this Kane-Seth Rollins thing since January. Like, you gotta blow it off at some point, or else we'd be sitting there going, why did you do all those Kane-Seth Rollins skits for all those months and then not do anything?
Exactly. Well, Kane's been great. This month.
And I think for a casual fan who's sitting at home who isn't, you know, following all this on the internet as closely, I think they're interested in this. I think this has a piece of the audience that maybe we take for granted. I think they're into this whole Kane set thing to some extent.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's still a Kane feud, which is normally not that great. But I mean, at the same time, it makes total sense because they've been building this up for most of the year, and then they finally did it. I think, to take Kane off for a while, and it makes total sense. And you know, the angles they've been doing with Kane being happy corporate Kane and then mean demon Kane. I like it. I mean, it's something new and it's working.
I don't know if it's like, I'm finishing up Stan Hansen's book, so I'm in that mindset of like All Japan Giant Baba booking. And it's like, oh, okay, he wouldn't be booking this. But
No, he wouldn't.
But it is, like, in wacky WWE logic, it kind of, I mean, it's, hey, his mask is magical. You can break his leg with his mask off, but if he puts his mask on, the lights turn red, steam billows out, and the big, it's Kane, it's gotta be Kane.
It's so goddamn stupid, which is why I love it, because I like dumb stuff.
That's when WWE gets bad. Like, when WWE can do dumb, when they just go all out dumb. When they sort of half dumb, that's miserable.
Yeah. But you know, the Kane thing where he's miraculously healed, I mean, it makes sense because if you remember, they actually did a biography on him, like a kayfabe, like biography on him, like a decade ago.
Journey into Darkness, the Kane story?
Yes.
There were two of them. It was that, and there was Big Apple Takedown, which is some weird spy story.
I don't remember that.
They were spies. It was like Tori Wilson, like Shabba Barrow was like one of the main secret agent people that like told, like, oh man, you get if anyone has not looked into that, you need to read that Boston Office coming up.
Yeah, the cover of the spy book is just like the Tori Wilson promo picture for spying, and it's like you have no idea what this is.
But it came
like one of those writers who does the rounds, who like will go on the torch tops and do the Court Bauer things. I think he wrote them. I think he's talked about them. So look, search those out. And I can't give you a name because I'm all about vague recommendations.
No, but so I feel
the path to true knowledge involves some work.
What I remember in Kane's biography is that he has that disease that where you're impervious to pain, and I think it's like a real disease. I mean, I've seen people have it, but in the kayfabe world, he has that disease, so it makes sense in that regard. I mean, it's silly, but it kind of makes sense, and it's kind of following continuity.
The mindset with Kane and Big Show, I think, is just mainly, like, Vince thinks two ways at once, whereas it's like, he doesn't mind having people lose, but during his big matches, he doesn't want to waste a loss on certain people. So he feels like the Big Show and Kane are people that can be panned all the time. So,
I, I do think, though, this has shown, like, in the specifics, Kane and Seth Rollins thing is fine, and in some ways it's even kind of enjoyable. But in the broader picture, yeah, this is a sign of, like, Vince's decline, because there's a different era of Vince McMahon that would have never even considered.
I mean, there's been signs of that
47-year-old guys in major spots to draw on pay-per-view. Like, he would have never done this in a different era. You know, like, he considered Jerry Lawler an ancient man. I think Jerry Lawler was, like, 41, you know?
That's why he took Randy Savage out in the early 90s for the same reason.
Like, Vince McMahon is, like, the obsessive about age and, oh, that guy's too old. He's been on top too long. I mean, he was looking to get rid of Hulk Hogan and Steve Austin when they were, like, in their late 30s and were the biggest draws in the history of wrestling because he was so conscious about age. So this is kind of, I think, one of the signs of Vince sort of turning into the, you know, I mean, you can go through the history of wrestling. There's been all these creative guys, all these bookers, all these guys who run companies who they hit a certain age and they start getting kind of a little loopy and a little out of things, and they start thinking guys who were big stars when they were really doing big business are still big stars long after people have stopped looking at them that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like Bill Watts and WCW bringing in all the Mid-South guys from 1986 who gave a crap about
in 1982 WCW. Brought guys back like Tony Atlas and Greg Valentine. He's like, things have changed from 1985 or whatever.
Yeah, when I see, like, Big Show or Kane getting pushes on TV in 2015, I can't not think about that, you know. Because we've seen this show before. We've seen this script.
You know what, to me, it's like they're not bad athletes at this point. I mean, Big Show is slow, but I think he's a better worker than he was 10 years ago, and you know, Kane's kind of middling. He's never been that great, but he's never been really bad either. But the point I want to make is that TV-wise, they're ancient. Yeah. Like, Big Show came in 1999, Kane came in 1997, and they, not to say they've been doing the same gimmick for the last 15-plus years, but they've been on TV with the, at least the general idea of the same gimmick. It's just tiring. And
this version of Big Show is basically the same Big Show we've seen since, like, 2008.
Yeah, and it's not to mention that they've done so many face and heel turns. It's like, whenever Kane goes heel, it's like, whatever.
Wait. What was, like, you said 2008. I think Big Show's been the same character since what was the difference? In 2000,
well,
you wore, like, costumes. And, like, 2002, you wore pants.
Big Show got serious. Like, there was a big one, like, he came in 99, and they were kind of pushing him, and then they did the, well, Steve, like, everybody had to beat him because the WWF political scene, like, all those political games had to be played. So then he lost to all those guys, and then they turned him in, and then they got mad at him for being fat, so he had, like, 2 years of just being a fat turd.
They sent him to OVW.
Yeah, and took him out of the video games and replaced him with Stevie Richards. But then they sort of started rehabbing him, and Paul Heyman, I think, was the guy behind rehabbing Big Show.
Yeah.
And he just, like, they would sort of get him a little bit better. And to me, though, the turning point is when Big Show went away. Like, they put the ECW belt on him whenever that ECW thing was going. And he had about a 3-month run where he was actually busting his ass, and we'd never seen Big Show actually bust his ass in a ring before. And then he retired, and he went away for, like, a year or two. And then he came back, and he was, like, the punch man.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the big show. This is, we've had that Big Show since that came back. And my memory, that's 2008 or 2007 when he made the comeback and became punch man Big Show.
So he's either, like, crying Big Show when he's a face, or I am a giant again, heel Big Show.
And he falls into, like, the Mark Henry trap of when he's a good guy, he's, like, a smiling, waving, jolly giant man.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he's a heel, he's, like, the, you know, he punches pregnant ladies to death. Like, he's so wildly different.
Was it Big Show that flipped over that car? Was that him? Now it's on episode SmackDown.
I think it was Mark Henry, wasn't it?
I thought one flipped over a car. I know Mark Henry lifted a car.
I thought Mark Henry just towed a truck.
Yeah, because they brought back his, like, Yeah, I think he won World Strongest Man that year again too.
Yeah, they brought him back. They brought him back in like 2002, and because he was an OVW too, because he wasn't that great of a worker. But yeah, he won a World Strongest Man contest in like 2002, and they brought him back up, and he was mostly doing like feats of strength on SmackDown for a while. I think that was one of them where he lifted over a car.
No, he lifted up a car. I think it was a Big Show Lesnar feud from like 02, that awful, awful feud where they decided to have Lesnar or Heyman turn on
Big Show. One of the dumbest. I mean, when you look back at WWE for the last 15 years, and people go, "Why did WWE's business collapse?" It's like, yeah, they did a bunch of dumb shit. Like they had Brock Lesnar building him up as like the monster heel of all heels, and then, oh, Hogan's not going to Australia, so we need a babyface. Okay, let's turn Brock Lesnar. And it's like, then they're just shocked when in 2003 or so, Brock Lesnar's not the draw he was supposed to be. It's like, well, yeah, you screwed up.
I did not know they turned Brock Lesnar heel because of that.
They turned him face just because they needed somebody to headline in Australia.
That's so short-sighted.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That face was awful, too. Yeah. He had no idea what he was doing. Like, that was the period where he desperately needed Paul Heyman to do all of his talking for him. And then all of a sudden now you've stripped him away, and he's a 22-year-old guy doing the best he can, and he's a great athlete, but, you know, as far as personality, he didn't really have it.
He lost something without Heyman.
The smiling baby face is really, really hard to do, especially for new people. And I think that's a lot of the problem what happens to a lot of new people that they did. I mean, the same thing happened with Dwayne Johnson, right? I mean, it's hard to come in and just do the happy face. It just doesn't, people don't attach to unless you're really, really charismatic. And when you're new, it's hard to do that, which is why the rough heel stuff works.
And, you know, we're also going to be talking about John Cena in this show. There's, like, this idea, like, people have now that, like, John Cena was forced down everyone's throat. Oh, my God, John Cena. John Cena got over without them doing his own gimmick. And then as soon as he got over and they realized, oh, shit, he's way more popular than anybody we've groomed, we better go with him. And then they started monkeying with his character and making him less popular.
Yeah, that's what turned everybody off, I think. I don't think it was so much that they forced on people's throats. It was that they changed his character considerably when he won the title, and that turned off a lot of people.
It was Roman Reigns 10 years before, and John Cena was just so much more, was so talented, he was able to fight his way through it and persevere and be this huge star. But the idea that they made it so easy for John Cena, no, they've consistently thrown roadblocks in front of that guy, and he just jumps around them or dives through them and does the best he can to get around the crap they throw his way. And it's not like they're intentionally doing it. They're just goofy.
Yeah. I mean, with Roman Reigns, I mean, at least with John Cena, they booked him better. I mean, the Roman Reigns push of this year was some of the worst booked shit I've ever seen. It's completely illogical in every fashion.
I know. The thing with Roman, and did Roman have a match this last night, or is that not?
He was in Maine. He wasn't at the MSG show.
Yeah, they did a hype video for him and Bray at Hell.
Okay. Yeah. I saw a little bit of the video. But I mean, a lot of people have spoken about Roman Reigns itself, and we're kind of spitballing this episode, but a lot of the thing with Roman Reigns is I think he's been booked pretty well since Mania. Before Mania, yeah, I mean, they should have put Bryan in the Rumble, which was their own stupid goal. But I think Roman's been doing better. I think he's been talking better. He's not ready to be the top guy, but I think he's improving.
He is.
There's a sorrow around him, though. Like, there's like a black cloud around him whenever I see him. It's like, oh, this is damaged goods. I hope he can get through that, because it's not like I'm rooting against him. But
I wouldn't say that badly, but at the same time, he's been feuding with Bray Wyatt for like the last 5 months, and it's not helping him. At this point, keep feuding with him.
here's the question. What kind of oogie boogie bullshit are they going to do to get out of having a finish at Hell in a Cell?
Yeah, this
will happen. Is a Cyberman going to show up? You know, Doctor Who story. Let's do a crossover. Dalek shows up and shoots Roman Reigns, and then Bray wins. Is that what's going to happen?
Sci-fi.
Sci-fi. Like, what's going to happen? Is the Earth going to open up, and then Roman falls in?
Nice.
Something's going to happen. That's all.
Roman's going to win. He's going to win.
Hope.
I don't know. I think people talk about Roman turning heel, and I think it's probably the best not because I think they need to be heel and agitated, but I think you need to kind of reboot him. But it kind of feels like he hasn't been rebooted. It's just like it kind of kept going on, but it's just gotten better. So I think you're still that stigma there.
Yeah.
It's just when you look back a couple of years ago, that felt like it was a real heavy. Like, oh man, we're almost in the cusp of a new era and something new starting. And then you look around and it's like Cesaro went nowhere. Dean's in whatever weird upper card limbo he's in. And Roman Reigns feels damaged. And Bray is just, oh my, we talked about Bray before. Bray is just whatever the hell Bray is.
Not to mention that Seth Rollins is like one of the worst book champions in a long time.
Well,
and he's great.
He has the best match every month.
And like all those other heel champions they've done, where it's like, it's the Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Miz, Edge. Like this is what their idea of the skinny heel champion is.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, none of those guys were booked all that great either. But I mean, it's just not that interesting because Seth Rollins, I don't think, has won a match clean in I don't know how long. I think there was a statistic on last night's Wrestling Observer Radio that he's won one in like 12 of his last matches. I mean, it's just terrible.
He's 1995 Ric Flair. Like, he's got to have a shoe to win a match, even against, like, the Eddie Guerrero of 2015.
Hey, man, Hogan needs to win. He needs to win, man. He is the champion, and he needs to beat Ric Flair. It doesn't matter that Ric Flair's great or that people don't like Hogan in his territory. He needs to win, and I'm not going to hear from you.
Well, I'm just waiting for the day that Seth starts showing up in the ring. Well, I guess he got fired. He would have been, Zahara would have been his Miss Liz. And just like I look forward to Seth having like an ocean of milky ladies with high heel shoes to hand him, because that's about where he's at.
People like to punch, man. That was a punch. The couple of the matches, like the other match, like I said, the other match I saw on the Madison Square Garden pay per view was the Jericho Owens match, which it seems like they're building like so Owens won with the irate roll up again, and they were kind of building that up to kind of make it so I guess he's going to be a champion at Chiefs. I guess,
but it's like that subtle cheating that actually is good, like that
it's like the
MMA guy who was always like grabbing people's eyes, you know, Paul Harris or whatever. Yeah. It's like that kind that you could actually get away with in a real fight. Like, you can't get away with 30 distractions and then we hit you with a chair, but if you just like dig your thumb in a guy's eye, you could maybe get away with that in real life.
That's more like John Jones than Paharis?
Paharis is the guy who like breaks people's
hands. He does the heel hook that he doesn't people will submit, but he won't let go of the hold. But you know what, he did have a lot of eye rakes in his last match. From what I remember.
Opponent had like the really screwed up, puffy.
Yeah, he was all messed up. And I'm surprised they haven't done anything to punish him yet. Yeah. But I think he's still like waiting for.
Owens is just doing a thing where it's like he's the last actual heel in wrestling. and he's getting over as a baby face with half the crowd. So,
which is fine.
One of the funny things about this match was Jericho introduced his two good friends at ringside, Lance Storm, maybe you've heard of, and Cyrus the Virus.
Nope,
and Cyrus the Virus is a giant fat man.
he looked really different. I mean, I didn't notice the weight, but just like the hair and the face and all that, he looked different.
And Lance Storm was sitting next to Jon Stewart at ringside. I just imagined those two having conversation.
Yeah, that was funny.
Jon Stewart explaining the library system to Lance Storm is a delight. And then Lance Storm explaining the purpose of a cage match to Jon Stewart. Like, now the purpose of this cage is to keep you from interfering, Jon. Because when you have a cage match, two men in or one man leaves.
And you know what? To their credit, that still cage match, Kane didn't go in and beat people up. He just stood out there.
Oh, thank fucking God.
Yeah, I know.
He scared Seth away from leaping the mat.
I mean, going into the show, I was hoping like maybe just get a straight up steel cage match because that would be cool. But then Kane showed up. I'm like, oh god damn it, it's gonna interfere. So I mean, I'm watching the match. I'm just sitting there waiting for him to interfere. But Demon Kane did come out and he just stood there, and Seth was like, well, what are you doing out here? And he's like, Seth was like on top of the cage, and he was like, well, either I can go down and attack Kane and win the title, or I can defeat John Cena with like a frog splash.
And that looked so painful.
Yeah, that wasn't a good landing.
Seth landed on his knees doing that frog splash from the top of the cage, Jimmy Snuka style.
Who they couldn't mention. They couldn't mention Snuka on TV tonight.
No, they couldn't. But
or Hogan.
I will say a little prayer for Seth that owns his knees today.
Yeah.
I saw that spot. I did see that. It was kind of all in half in the background. But yeah, that was. I'm kind of cringed. That was a rough one.
But
yeah, the match. You know what it reminded me of? A lot of the matches on here reminded me of like an old Clash where there's some decent like match ideas coming up, and you know some of them kind of counted for kind of high stakes kind of way. But they all had weird finishes that kind of promoted the next team to come up. And that last match really reminded me of that. Where they gave people a match, the match went on for a while. Yeah, it's from what I was kind of seeing, it seemed all right. But then they gave the screw finish, which promoted the next match. It was like the, I watched one of the Clashes that had, like, Flair Funk in it, and I think that ended with the screw finish as well that set up the next match. I think it was set up, like, the Vader or something, and I don't remember.
Hmm.
Yeah, in general, this show is a little bit like going to a house show, except the matches were shorter sometimes than when you go to a house show.
This was a house show pretty much, just with Brock Lesnar in it.
Yeah, because the opening match, like, Randy Orton and Dolph Ziggler were doing all kinds of, like, wacky, we're pals things with each other, which I thought was really, especially given their history, I thought it was pretty funny. To see them like, hey, let's give each other piggyback rides, and you know that was amusing. And the women's match was
stupid.
It was just a Raw match, except PCB turned on Paige instead of them turning on her.
This whole angle with Paige is really, really stupid, and the kind of shit I expected from last year's booking. I expected more with this whole Divas Revolution thing, but it's like Paige is being like one of these like generalizations that she's like a catty woman.
I didn't see it, so explain this to me, what happened. So there was like a three-way, there was like a tag match, so that's all I know.
Replayed an angle, I think from SmackDown, where they had a six-man match. Paige abandoned them, and then the Bellas won.
That was on Raw.
With the damned numbers advantage. That was on Raw. Okay. The damned numbers. And so on this match, they basically did the same match, except Becky and Charlotte just dropped down and folded their arms, and so it was Paige all alone. And then Paige got beat, and the C and the B walked away, and the P sat in the ring crying and cut a weird promo.
Yeah, it's exactly like last year's gimmick where she was crazy.
Yeah. She's a crazy person who can't get along with anybody. Women.
So she was. So Charlotte and Becky were booked as the faces? Because they just left?
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, it was kind of. It was booked as like turnabouts, fair play.
I mean,
That WWE thing where you can be a total prick asshole, but if somebody was a prick asshole to you first, then it's good.
did they, like...
And Paige is literally, like, insane, because she cut a promo about how she could not understand why anyone would do such a thing to her, even though she did the same thing to them, like, a week ago, so...
Did they do anything, like, during the match? Like, was Paige shown to be crazy, or they're just like, oh, fuck it, we give up now? Or did they
just... She was doing a bunch of blind tags.
Yeah, there's a spot where Charlotte had one of them in the figure eight, then Paige, like, slapped her on the back for a tag in, and then they argued. So,
it's like, partners fighting. Yeah. Oh, man, those blind tags.
All right, well, as long as it didn't come out of nowhere, I'm not saying it's good, but
it's not.
It seems like at least kind of made sense.
There's an internal logic to it. It's just the same old crap we've seen out of women's storylines.
Exactly. And if this is supposed to be a revolution, but it's like the same stuff with like three new people.
And Nikki Bella pinning everybody.
Yeah.
She dropped her belt and she's had two pinfalls over.
Well, she's going to get the title shot probably later this month. So it makes sense.
You know, and she and her sister continue to innovate ways to show previously hidden butt regions. And so. As we discussed before the show,
the Divas Revolution.
Hall of Fame candidacy.
Yeah.
The Divas Revolution. Short shorts are the Divas Revolution.
I just think it was funny that, like, when the Divas Revolution was starting, Dave Meltzer did a pretty long rant about what, you know, that they should change the presentation of the women to try to make them, you know, more sport-like and less... Hey, yep. Let's show off their bodies and look like, you know, sexy here. And ever since then, it feels like the Bellas have gotten more, like, they're short. Like, Nikki Bella, one day, her butt's just going to fall out. If it hasn't already. Like, it's, like, her shorts keep getting shorter and shorter, and so they're just not going to be shorts anymore. You know, Bree just got, like, a giant swath of fabric cut out over her butt. So, it's like they're going out of their way to do the opposite of what you should do to promote, you know, women as athletes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It needs to be like a really different approach from how you do it. And that's not what I've seen. You've brought in a few new people, but it's still the same stuff.
Yeah. And Alicia Fox is around for some reason. No one's ever really fully explained it other than she said a promo backstage one time 9 months ago that someone may or may not remember.
But she's an in-year veteran. Why wouldn't you team with her?
Yeah, Nikki's a veteran. And just before the internet just tells me and goes on about, well, you know, whatever, you know, it's nice because they're pretty ladies. I get it. I get the Nikki we're pretty ladies. I agree. And Alicia. But you know what? I have the internet, man. You're internet people. You are the internet. You should know this already. I can just search one spot that I really want to.
I feel like the skimpy clothing thing though isn't for the 20-year-old male, and it's not for the 9-year-old boy either. It's for the 50-year-old man who hasn't figured out how porn works on the internet.
Yes, the viewers of the Raw program. If you look at the ratings. Yes.
The viewers of Raw are mostly like 50-year-old dudes. Who aren't quite sure how these old computators work, and so they sit down and they look at their cheesecake, and that's pretty good looking, and then they go on, and that's all they've watched these matches for.
I thought you were going to talk about Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn, but it's kind of the same thing, right?
Well, add 20 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, breaking news here in the Fire Pro Studios. According to Chris Jericho's Instagram account, he has a picture of him with Insane Clown Posse. So, Chris Jericho, no longer anywhere close to cool. Unfortunately, it's over. If you didn't think he was cool before, great. You're worthy now. But now there's unfortunately, it's all over. Rest in peace, Chris Jericho's it factor at all.
He no longer knows how magnets work. And,
listen, I get the wrestling world. I understand there's a little bit of racism. Egos abound. I can forgive Triple H for his ego, but a Juggalo, I'm just not fucking doing it, man. I can't. It's over. Done with this. Sorry, Y2J. I'm going to have to throw in a Happenstance CD that I don't have anymore. But I did buy it.
To be honest, I really liked the Oddities theme when I was a kid.
You were awful.
Everyone come see the greatest show. Gather up all juggalos and go.
Who knew that ICP would have such a long and storied career in the wrestling world?
They did go to like all three promotions.
Terry Funk said they're the greatest promoters he's ever worked for.
You know, they're nice guys. I think they were on like Red Eye ones, and they seemed like they were nice guys. But man, they're stupid.
The FBI says that they're the head of a hate group.
Yeah
because, so. Well, like, as in a group that everyone hates, I agree. The ultimate hate group are Insane Clown Posse. I agree. I thought everyone needed to know that.
I have no real opinion of them. Just don't. Like, talking about the Insane Clown Posse in, like, 2015 is kind of weird.
They have a new album, though, man. They have, like...
They have
a big following.
...popular with that weird audience.
Not to get way off topic, but Insane Clown Posse are the stupidest fucking band in the world. Because, so, they had what was called, like, they had, like, the 6 Joker cards, and they had an album each time where it's, like, welcome to the Dark Carnival, man, where crazy shit's happening. And they talk about, like, killing people and, like, doing crazy shit. And then, at the end, we'll reveal what the Dark Carnival's all about. And it turned out that the Dark Carnival was like Jesus. And that they were scrapping with God the whole fucking time. And I just can't deal with that. Like, it's like you knew Insane Clown Posse is bad, but also there's some stupid religious rap group. And it's just like, it's like, surprise, we're way worse than you thought. It's amazing.
You know, never before has meth and Jesus been combined, but ICP on the forefront of a new paradigm.
It's amazing. ICP are amazingly awful.
Yeah, I would suggest Nathan Rabin from The Onion has gone to the Juggalo thing a bunch of times and written about it.
The Gathering. I think it's called.
I thought it was called Hipster.
So check that out, guys.
I saw that. Just before we go on, anything else about this MSG show that's worth going on about? Anything that I should know that I missed or anything with the main event itself?
No,
Madoff was apparently on a dark match. So, for those of you who still remember the summer of Brad Maddox being a thing that everyone had to have an opinion about, he's still employed.
Do you think about all the random people who are still employed, but then they use the same, like, 20 people on Raw and SmackDown each week? It's really weird. You know what I mean? Like, Brad Maddox hasn't been on TV since the Authority angle started, and that was, like, 2 or 3 years ago. And he's just sitting there, and...
dressing like Okada.
Yeah. Yeah, he dyed his hair blonde. I think he tried a new character a few months ago.
I thought he changed his name, but apparently his rundown says he's Brad Maddox again. So
yeah.
That could be incorrect.
Yeah. What is the Brad Maddox character? What is it?
Smarmy guy. Like, that's all I know about him.
Pretty guy?
Sure.
My wrestling knowledge from, like, 2008, like, 2013 is, it's fairly low.
There was such a weirdly ill-defined character, though, even for them. It's like, no one really knew what his purpose was besides he just has a job as, like, associate to the general manager, which was, like, an office job, an office joke, like, 10 years after The Office started. He's like, oh, man, Vince finally got some DVDs, or he finally, like, caught an episode of The Office on TBS. So we're going to do some assistant to the general manager jokes.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man.
The other thing was the Dudleys and the New Day. The New Day were wacky again, and they're awesome.
Yes,
a joy to behold. And they did the same finish at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I like the match. I hated the stupid finish.
Well, what is the finish?
It's so lazy. It's just like, oh, well, they pinned him, and then Xavier Woods runs in and kicks him and DQs. It's like, come on, guys. Cope with something a little bit better.
I know, it's just so... tired of those DQ finishes.
I mean, should have no finishes. They should have non-finishes because the point is to build to the Dudley beating them. But they're so lazy and
But the weird thing is they're building it up like the Dudleys were going to win here and then they didn't.
Yeah. Well, they built it up properly then, right?
That's WWE booking, but I mean, I guess you can do it again at Hell in a Cell, but it's like, this is,
It's not that the idea is wrong, it's that they're just so lazy with coming up with ways to get to where they want to go. Like, their A to B destination might be okay, but come on, man. You don't have to just take the straight line.
Exactly.
You need to zigzag a little bit.
I'm hoping Mookie Ghana does stats on, like, how many DQ finishes we've had this year and how many main event finishes we've had without DQs. I'd be interested in that. I think he's done that before in other years, and the stat was pretty interesting. I forget what it was, though.
A lot.
Yeah. It was a lot.
I'm finishing this Stan Hansen book, like I mentioned, and Stan Hansen tells a story about when he was doing his AWA run, and he realized he finally got a hold of one of their booking sheets, and it was just a sheet of paper with Greg Gagne, Stan Hansen, Rick Martel, Nick Bockwinkel, and Kurt Hennig, and just those five names with a blank next to them. And so every week their TV format was just to write in what jobber would face their five guys they cared about. And it's like, okay, that's all your TV is? No wonder you're going out of business. Like, you're not even trying anything.
Has he told the story about how he, like, ran over the AWA title with a truck or something and shipped it back to them?
Yeah, he said it was his last day with the belt. He had gotten the FedEx box to send it back to Minneapolis, and he decided to enjoy his belt one last time and get on his tractor in Colorado. And I'll be John Brown if I didn't drop it and then accidentally run over it four times. That was how he phrased it.
That was awesome.
It's amazing how stuff happens.
Yeah.
But yeah. Gary Hansen book, The Last Outlaw, written with some guy who does a lot of ghostwriting for wrestling books.
Is this a new book or an older book?
2012.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fairly recent.
Yeah.
The same guy has done the J.J. Dillon book and the Foley Anderson book.
I've heard good things about the J.J. Dillon book. I've heard good things.
I had that one too. We may do a book review someday. Maybe not. That's kind of Todd Martin's gimmick. I said his name.
I've heard Bob Backlund's book is great too.
Yeah, I've heard good things about the Backlund book too. I might check that out.
Yeah.
There's just so many wrestling books. I haven't read a lot. I bought Brian's book, but I haven't read it. And I read Foley's book, and I read Jericho's book, his first one, and half of his second one, which I haven't finished yet. That's good. Like those are the two, like, I think the Foley and Jericho book are really, really good.
Like the book?
I think you could read the Jericho book even if you didn't like wrestling, you'd really enjoy it.
Yeah, Jericho's books are really good. So are Mick Foley's. Bret Hart's book was really good, too.
Yeah, I read Bret's.
Very Hart book. That one to me stands out. Pretty exceptional.
Yeah. And of course, WCW was great, too.
I have like three copies of, and I haven't read any of them.
I got the new the newest edition on Kindle.
Yes. I did as well. I think that, like, I've been kind of reading murder mysteries again, and so I've been doing that, and then I think Carrie Brownstein's book comes out, and that's, you know, my hipsterness comes before my wrestling, so Carrie Brownstein needs to go first.
Oh, and a few weeks ago, Eric Bischoff was on the part one of the Eric Bischoff on Ric Flair. He suggested a great book, which I read on his recommendation, and I think all of our fans who are wrestling fans should read it too, called Fools Rush In, about the AOL Time Warner merger. And that one, if you're a fan of WCW and you kind of have questions, it fills in a lot of gaps from Death of WCW.
Because, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, Death of WCW focuses really heavily on what WCW was doing wrong. But Fools Rush In kind of tells you the other picture of that larger company. Because there's always, like, those people asking the question, like, why did they cancel the show and kill the value of WCW right when they were trying to sell it? And if you read Fool's Rush In, you find out about how that company wasn't really one cohesive company, and all the divisions were sort of looking out for themselves. And, you know, everything makes more sense when you read that.
Now, speaking of Eric Bischoff, this week also they had the debut of JBL's new show.
Ooh, I like JBL.
I know, I like JBL. Listen, I like JBL.
Fox-loving weirdo.
Oh yeah. Let's wake up a full Fox News episode. Let me tell you. But yeah, he had an interview series, which it's not like it was kind of not really like a podcast. It was more like a sit down interview, a little bit more professional. I don't know if professional is the right word for it, but it was a bit different there. And they had the first one with Eric Bischoff. Now, did you guys see any of that?
I watched the first episode, not the second one.
And what did you think of it?
I thought it was. Pretty. At least he gave his side of the story, because the whole Monday Night Wars documentary series they did is exactly one story about how Ted Turner was this evil guy and Vince McMahon was this rogue, you know, whatever. And he had defied the odds and he beat Ted Turner and he destroyed WCW and how WWE was so great in doing it and. Blah, 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 blah. And at least with Eric Bischoff, he gave a different side of the story. And for the most part, I think he was truthful. I mean, Dave Meltzer did a huge thing about it on the latest Observer. And I mean, it was good for what it was. But then again, JBL asked the same questions that we've seen asked so many times on so many other shows. It's like, yeah, okay. I mean... Yeah, I know all about the night that WWF invaded WCW.
God, nobody cares about that.
Exactly. They think that it's like this great moment.
They made Impact, man. They ran around a thing.
Nobody at the time gave a shit about their dumb skit with the friggin' tank.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it means nothing the longer, but that's like still like the thing that they like to go to. Like, they were so cool the night they did it. And I mean, like, sure. I mean, back in the day, that was probably kind of cool and clever. But now you've, like, kind of beaten that narrative down so much.
It's the guy who played on the football team but wasn't the quarterback but won't shut up about how he played on the football team.
Yeah.
And so it's not only is it sad because it's, like, 20 years later and it's, like, you're still talking about it, but it's also, you weren't even the guy. Like, you weren't even... Like, this isn't even the way... Like, you've now, like, made yourself more important to the team, and it's a dumb thing in the first place. But, yeah, Eric Bischoff is kind of better when he's with a hostile interviewer who's going to, like... Or someone who just puts it back on his heels. Like, the Ric Flair thing podcast was great because Ric Flair would just, like, sidetrack to talk about times that they wife-swapped or, like... make weird allusions to them sharing each other's wives, and you could just hear Eric go back on his head like, what? We're talking about that? Like, Rick would just throw him a friggin' knuckleball at him, and he'd go, okay, and it just sort of put it back on his heels, and I think it made their show, their interview, go better than most Bischoff interviews I hear.
Yeah, I watched it. I think I saw like half of the second part, but I saw all the first one. Yeah, since the questions were good, I like Jay Villain. I think he asked kind of the right questions. I think Bischoff answered them. You know, you could tell he wasn't going to go at him, but But you could tell that when they're just like, even JBL kind of knew the answers to the questions, and it almost seemed like he was trying to clear the air himself, where he was talking about, like, so, you know, especially what you're saying, that Ted Turner stuff, where, how much did Ted Turner really know? He's like, not anything, right? Like, he had that one interview with, if you remember...
They played that same interview over and over on each episode of the Monday Night Wars, like that same interview.
Yes, that's what I was talking about. So, yes, if you haven't seen the first Monday Night Wars DVD, which honestly, like, I watched it a million times when it was out, it's, that interview where Eric Bischoff is in the empty arena and he does that Ted Turner impression. Give him 2 hours on Monday on... Yeah. And it's the same, and they ran that dry. So I'm glad they got a new interview so you can at least not hear that same thing over and over again.
I was talking about the Ted Turner interview.
A million times that like Nitro wasn't a thing that was supposed to happen. It was Eric got thrown back on his heels in a meeting and said, "Well, give us this," and then okay, well there we are.
Yeah, I remember that they did have that interview from 2003 that they played over and over and over again, but they also had a Ted Turner interview. I think it was like a rant. I don't even think it was about WCW, but I think it was just asked about WCW, and he gave the same story, and they aired it over and over and over and over again. It's like, how many times could you air the same interview with Ted Turner? Because it's like the only time he ever talked about WCW.
They used this, I mean, for their DVDs, they used the same Jim Cornette interview for basically any DVD about WCW in the 80s or NWA or tag teams.
Yeah.
And it's always Jim Cornette in the same red jacket with a black shirt and a red tie. And I've seen that. They got a lot of use out of that conversation with Jim Cornette that day. That's all I can say. He must have sat down with him for the same time as he did that damn RF shoot that's 4 hours, and they just pull out Jim Cornette quotes whenever they got to talk about tag teams in the 80s.
That's a good special.
Eric's always bullshit, but that's what he, I mean, that's Eric. Like, he's always been, I mean, full of shit about everything.
Yeah.
He's much less of a bullshitter than most executives, but in saying that, he's still a television executive, and he's still a currently active one, and so you're going to get what you're going to get.
I think he's as big a bullshitter as anybody, but I think the difference between Eric and a lot of people is that he's a little bit better at bullshitting than other people. Like, he's better at sounding reasonable, whereas, you know, somebody like Hulk Hogan, it just has no awareness of how stupid he sounds when he says, "Well, I traveled time, brother."
He was going to leave for Metallica, remember? He's going to be the main Metallica guy.
Cliff Burton and Hulk Hogan are the same person.
Yeah.
Exclusive to this podcast. No, but the difference between Hogan and Bischoff is that Hogan kind of believes his bullshit. I think Bischoff just kind of knows and just manipulates stuff. But that's why Hogan's kind of endearing, or kind of was before, you know, those racist rants.
Eric and Russo have this, like, Russo has, like, you know, Russo's about to tell you a whopper when he goes, "You know, bro!" And then here it comes. And then Eric's tell is always, we're just, "You know, I just don't remember that fully. You know, I just don't have those contracts in front of me anymore." That's the Eric Bischoff bro.
Yeah, I mean, we're
talking about how I just, my memory, there's a lot of things that have happened. And it's always like when you're asking, "So, is it true that Ernest the Cat Miller was given ownership points in Turner Broadcasting for a contract?" And then he goes, "Yeah, I just don't have that contract in front of me, but that doesn't sound right. I wouldn't do that." Wink.
Was that a real rumor?
I came up with something crazy. But, like, there's always these crazy contract rumors. Eric, his answer to all of them is always, "Well, I just don't have that contract in front of me, but that just doesn't sound plausible."
I mean, with Bischoff's interview, I mean, like, he probably did bullshit a lot in the interview. I mean, I don't know, but I just think it was a more accurate narrative than what WWE did for their series.
Yeah, because WWE's narratives are
WWE's the best.
Like, if you listen to WWE, then, you know, 1990, like, the fans were just, they were cheating to make WCW more watchable in 1996, and not that WWF was just utterly unwatchable. And WCW was awesome.
You know what's ironic is that in that Monday Night War thing, they listed all the problems that happened with WCW, and I'm not saying it's, like, as big as WCW's problems were, because towards the end, WCW had major problems, but it's not like WWE isn't facing those issues today, too. I mean, Raw is really long. There's no really initiative to create new stars. They keep the old guys on top, as we've talked about.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of guys on that roster that could have a push, and WWE's done everything in their power to make them a mid-card guy or even worse.
Unwillingness to acknowledge that the fans' tastes have changed and 300 pounders with long hair aren't necessarily what people want to see. They want to see, you know, 185-pound guys with masks on.
Exactly. And
what does that company sound like? Yeah. And I don't think they ever like to talk about why WWF Raw sucked in 1996, because it's a lot of the same problems that this one has. It's like, oh, a lot of wrestling for no reason, no real finishes, lots of just DQs or time limit draws or whatever, and nothing ever really happens. Oh, what show does that sound like?
Yeah, I mean, just a lot of parallels that are really interesting when you compare them to one another. Especially since they're telling you what these problems are, and anybody who watches Raw and watches these episodes go, well, that kind of sounds like Raw today. You know? Yeah. It's just an overly long show.
Especially when they have like Chris Jericho complaining about, man, they just, I would get over, and then they would just cut my legs out from under me. And it's like, oh, I've never heard of any company doing that before.
Yeah, Cesaro. I mean, a bunch of other people. Dean Ambrose, I mean, was over at one point, and they just kind of done nothing with him.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to go through the whole list, it's like Kofi Kingston.
No, let's not. We don't have all day.
Yeah, we don't have all day.
Yeah.
It's not a 12-hour podcast. No. I'm cutting this line off.
Oh. So, well, I do, if we're going to talk about parallels to the past, John Cena might be coming up on some parallels to the past. John Cena's taking a break, a leave of absence.
Yep.
To, you know, personal issues. But if you look at the history of WWE, the guys who've been on top all fall out at some point.
Yeah.
Are we on the cusp of such a thing, I ask?
You mean like John Cena never coming back?
Well, I think there's always something that causes it. You know, and there's the other thing that, you know, when I started thinking about this, is John Cena has been on top longer than anybody in WWE history besides Bruno Sammartino.
Mm-hmm.
In like wrestling, like, well, not wrestling, I guess, not wrestling history, but at least in,
I mean, in WWE's history, only one guy has been their flagship star longer for one continuous run,
and that's at a different time too. Like this is a week of television time,
drastically different time. But you know, not even adjusting. Like Bruno Sammartino was their top draw from like 1963 to about, we'll say what, 1982?
Yeah, around that kind of time, yeah.
You know, Hulk Hogan was the man from, he came in December of 83, so we'll say 84 through the middle of 93, so that's 9.5 years. Cena has been their flagship number one babyface from 2005 until today. That's a longer run than anybody's had. It's like three times as long as Steve Austin's run.
Yeah.
So
when you think about Steve Austin and The Rock did not have maybe like half that.
Yeah, like Steve Austin's entire run on top was what, 98 to 2001.
Yeah.
With a bunch of gaps in between for surgeries.
Yeah, and The Rock's like 98 through. Well, he's still a draw, but obviously he's an actor instead of a wrestler. So, I mean, if we're looking at before he became a movie star, I mean, it's like 98 through 2003, I would say.
Yeah, and they didn't start putting him in the main events until Survivor Series of 98.
Yeah.
Before that, he was, you know, Intercontinental Champion level. So when you look at John Cena, he's been on top longer than anybody, and I think we kind of think about him differently than a lot of their top guys. We think about, well, he seems more, you know, he seems more like sensible and more, you know, got his head on his shoulders. And I think we all sort of think of him as he's going to be the guy who doesn't have the freak out. But everybody's had the freak out. Bruno had the freak out. Hogan had the freak out. Brett had a bigger freak out than most.
What?
Sean had the freak out. Austin had the freak out. Rock had the freak out. Mick Foley had the freak out. Everybody but Triple H, and Triple H married into the family.
No, Michaels lost his smile. He had to go away for a while because of his smile. That was not his fault.
Yeah, Sean had like a back surgery that was supposed to keep him out for 9 months, but kept it up for 4 years.
you know, and Diesel had the freak, Nash had the freak out, you know, and he only was on top for like a year.
Yeah.
So, all the tendency is like, if you're on top of that company, the stress of being on top, of staying on top, and then when it's pulled out from, when it's pulled away from you, all those guys react poorly. And it remains to be seen if Cena can handle that, but it's hard not to think if he goes away for a significant period of time. And apparently, he's having some issues with a family member who may have some pretty bad health issues, and he's wanting to be near that family member. That's the story that's going around. If he goes away for a period of time and then they move on, which is what WWE tends to do, if you're not there, if you're not in the, if you're not on the pirate ship, they just get used to somebody else being on the pirate ship instead. And he doesn't handle that well, we may be on the verge of the John Cena freakout.
The thing is, I think he's scheduled for shows in December. So I think he's only going to be out for about a month at most.
Yeah.
And, I mean, when I think about John Cena being gone, I think about the fall of 2013 where he had that big elbow surgery and was gone for about a couple of months. And the assumption was he was going to be out for the rest of the year. So I was interested in seeing who they push. And it was like they could push Daniel Bryan or they could push The Big Show. And they ended up... He pushed Daniel Bryan, but he was basically like a jobber to Randy Orton. Mm. And then they went with Big Show, and it was like one of the worst feuds of the year. I mean, to me, I think it's like, yeah, they could put guys in there for like the heels to face, but at the end of the day, everybody's looking forward to John Cena coming back and saving the day. I think that's the narrative they've always done whenever John Cena's been injured, and I don't really see it changing until it finally does change.
You know, we're at that point, though, with him where he's, what, he's 38?
Yeah, he's up
there. Vince might be thinking, you know, oh, it might be time. And obviously Vince isn't as attuned to this as he used to be because we talked about that earlier in the show. But you never know. You never know. Like, when a guy goes away, you never know how they're going to react to it. Especially when he's not going away for injury. I mean, wrestling is cold, and WWE and Vince is colder than most. So...
Yeah,
we'll see how this all goes.
This is a very interesting time to take off.
It could lead to something really interesting, and it might not be interesting at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting time to take off because, and I think we're going to get to this later, but Raw's ratings are very low right now, and with football coming up, or it's already here, and we've already seen numbers reaching new levels, and not good levels. I mean... that's really interesting time to take off considering everything that's going down right now.
And there's a rumor that Dave's trying to confirm that Daniel Bryan's going to be on a European tour and might be coming back on television. Daniel Bryan's had a doctor saying he can wrestle for months and months now. And WWE's doctors have been like, we're not sure about this. And obviously
and
they've got lawsuits. And they've got lawsuits against them, and they want to be cautious.
And Bryan's insane. Bryan is totally insane and injures himself all the fucking time. I mean, I love Bryan a lot, but man is concussion prone. I mean, when you're concussion prone,
he only knows one way.
Yeah.
He only knows the one way how to work, and he's just gonna do. He's gonna work his way.
I just remember that run where he came back and he kept landing on his head. It's like, well, no wonder they don't want to push you. I mean, if you're gonna take bumps like that over the Intercontinental title, then I mean that's. Oh, that's the place for you, I guess. I mean, because you're not being very safe.
Yeah, you know, that's for sure. But if they're willing to bring Daniel Bryan back, it does kind of tell you that,
it's over, man. WWE's on fire. It's over. If they're talking to Bryan, man. It's like...
well, it means that they're just a little bit more desperate.
Recipe WWE, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the company that's still number one in the time slot, which, Brad, you want to take it away?
Okay, well, if we're just going to get a ratings right away, so there's kind of been... With ratings are weird. Before we even talk about Raw ratings, I just really want to talk about cable. Cable is fucking weird. First off, the big thing in why ratings matter for network television is essentially that there's a limited amount of space. And there's a big group. So, first of all, even taking a step below that, there's basically one group of people that people care about, and it's 18 to 49 year old, mostly 18 to 49 year old males, because they buy the most stuff. But anyone in that kind of age. So that's the slot they go to. So there's total viewers, which is a lot of stuff you'll see kind of Dave go into, and then there's key demo, which is a percentage of the amount of people watch it. Those are kind of, I think, those are more to show. The key demo stuff is kind of to show more for advertisers than that. That's going to be the thing they're looking at. That's going to be the key to show for success. Now, back on to ratings itself. The big thing with network television is, like I said, there's a limited amount of space. So ratings are super important because they have to use that space wisely to get as much money as possible. Cable doesn't really do that. If you kind of notice, a lot of cable stuff, even in prime time, is reruns. So they have a lot of space to play around with. So ratings don't mean as much in that sense. So a lot of times when, like, there's been a lot of talk where, like, a slight dip in something like the SmackDown ratings or the Raw ratings or whatever, where people kind of treat it like, okay, that's going to be the slam or the cancel. Cable doesn't really look that way. So I know there's been kind of a bit of talk about how that would kind of be the end of it, but I don't really see it that way. Now, it certainly could mean in a few years that maybe they won't get as much money for advertising-wise. Do you know, it's something like they have 3 more years left in their contract, as you would say, isn't it?
I think so. It's a long-term deal that they signed last year.
It's a long time. I know they were originally surprised they weren't going to get as much.
Yeah.
But, I mean, some of you remember, like, yeah, you did say it back then. As for script television, they are, first of all, they're number one with USA, and they have very high ratings for for cable in general. What's kind of funny about cable is that there's basically 2 days where cable is competitive, Sundays and Mondays, and that's even without football. If you ever go to, like a TV by the numbers or anything like that, if you go check out, like, cable ratings for Wednesday as an example, like, everything is like low ones, low nines. Like, you'll get, like, Bring on a Family Guy is number one in the ratings.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, but Family Guy reruns are a bit of a juggernaut because they do.
Dude, seriously, yeah,
they kick the Major League Baseball playoffs ass.
So that's what gets Adult Swim's high ratings is those Family Guy reruns.
So
that's what put them on the map.
Yeah, it's Family Guy reruns. It's a joke. It's sometimes funny to joke. Aha, rerun of a cartoon. No, they are no joke. They are a badass. So yeah, don't I don't watch Family Guy, but Lord knows people do, and they are a cable juggernaut.
Yeah, and they're very big with even for like the time slot. They get close to like a one rating for that there. But yeah, it's interesting to kind of see that, like, in cable ratings are appearing in that way too. But I mean, Raw is definitely, the ratings are going down. I don't know how much of an impact would be unless you start seeing it go way, way down. But slight changes in ratings isn't going to be a big deal. Now, I think Dave did a piece in The Observer this week, speaking about cable ratings, and a lot of that stuff is fine, but one of the faults that I really don't like about the comparisons is when there's a comparison between the ratings now and what happened in, say, 1987. Just because the cable landscape has changed so much, even in total viewers. Now, comparing total viewers is silly anyway, but even when you're doing key demo stuff, it's hard when football's on. Because that is going to affect it. Remember, it's a percentage. So it's a certain amount of people watching it. So really the fact that Raw hasn't gone, you know, way down during those key demos, it actually speaks for the audience it has, which means it seems like it at least has some sort of a little fan base. Now, a lot of the problem with all this is the idea of what Vince wants the company to be. So he wants, like, a lot of people, I think Jeff Gertzman of Giant Bomb said that wrestling is a lot like porn when it comes to the way they want mainstream exposure, where they'll catch and grab on anything that shows that they might have mainstream exposure. And I think them trying to do that and trying to try to trap those people is initially is their problem, and that's why you'll kind of see ratings fluctuate. And, you know, if you look on any of the board example and things like that, where people are so negative on the show, it's because they're trying to grab another group of people that really don't give a shit about the show.
Yeah. And I mean, even though Raw's ratings have slumped over the years, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still like one of the top rated shows on Mondays. I mean, the only thing besides football, and also some sort of show called like Love and Hip Hop, but I don't even know what
love
that
and,
is.
I love the Love and Hip Hop reports every week.
Yeah, I don't know
I
what
hope
that
they
is.
Never end.
I don't know what that is, but and it is still like in the cable ratings, like the top 10, I think WWE's still on there.
Yep. So I'd have to check this week, but they often do make it kind of number one, and like they've got a good pull on it. Now, one of the big key factors in the blank spot that I have in all this is how much USA is paying and how much advertisers pay per slot. I don't know how much per slot they get, and that's one of the big things, because if they're not getting advertised enough, then that can change it. Because I know a lot of things with wrestling involved, they may not get as high for ad spots, so those ratings are a little bit different. But
from what I understand, most of the advertising money is going to USA.
Yeah.
Whereas in the Spike TV era, WWE was getting what Spike paid them, plus they were keeping almost all the advertising revenue, or a big percentage of it. And that was the big thing about going back to USA, they lost that. I think the thing that everybody needs to keep in mind when people talk about, oh, ratings, oh, my God, is that for roughly 25, 30 years, every year the percentage of people watching TV, watching on cable, went up every single year throughout the 90s and throughout most of the 2000s. And then we hit a point about 4-ish years ago where that percentage of people watching TV through cable stalled and then started going down. So when you're talking about WWE's ratings decline, you have to put it in context of the fact that fewer and fewer people are watching television via cable every single year. So your available audience keeps getting smaller, whereas in the 90s and in the early 2000s, your available audience kept going up every year.
Yeah, and it keeps getting older as well. The only thing that you get a spike a little bit of is things like for football. I'd have to look into it a little bit more instead, because that's the real reason why key demos is kind of important, because it is a percentage, and it does kind of give you an idea of what's going on, which is kind of surprising to me that you don't see as, based on the shares that like Monday Night Football gets, that ratings don't actually go lower from it. So it seems at least some group of people are still watching, are watching the show, which is surprising. Now, I did look up Nielsen's last top 10, which seems to be from last week, so it's not going to be up until next week, but each hour of Raw was in the top 10. So all 3 hours are in the top 10. The only things that are beating it were the football game, the Jets-Colts game, and Walking Dead, which I believe premiered that week. For the Fear of the Walking Dead.
That's a giant ratings.
Yeah, that show's one of the biggest shows on all of television.
Yeah.
Walking Dead, yeah.
I think there's just a lot of like, oh my God, the sky is falling! And it's sort of just based on some kind of, I just want to say, like, maybe some erroneous data, or not maybe a totally sophisticated look at the data.
I mean, not necessarily. I think some of it does show that there's a problem. It does show, and it kind of confirms what people are saying, where there's some interest in the show is becoming very minimal, and they're kind of keeping the niche audience that they had. But as for a sign that things are going to die, like people are speaking like, well, good God, it's going to be canceled, things like that. I've seen that a couple times. I don't think it's going to go that far. It's troublesome, but it's not the apocalypse. At least not yet. I mean, yeah, we could wake up next week and they could get like a 0.8 if they keep kind of doing what they're doing.
If they had some kind of sudden crazy drop, that would be different. But that's not what we've seen out of it. It's just been this slow
slow erosion.
Even if they fall like a full point, I think they're still like at the USA average. So it's not like it's not they're going to go to that level anytime soon.
Yeah, USA isn't the network it was 10 years ago when they rejoined USA. No. Like 10 years ago, they had like 4 or 5 hit shows on cable. They had Psych, they had Monk, they had the shows where people wear suits, and I think they had Suits. And they had Burn Notice, and they had the one where there's a doctor. And all those shows, even if, you know, they didn't exactly have a ton of, like, mainstream appeal, where people talked about them around the water cooler, they were really highly watched programs. And they don't have that anymore. Which, good, there's a reason, girl. There's a reason.
And that works for WWE. Aren't
producing a lot of hit programming on cable.
And that works for WWE. That's why they got the third hour, and that's why SmackDown's coming to USA in January, I think, because they still want to be number one in the ratings, and even though the ad space for Raw and SmackDown aren't great, they still can manage to get far better ratings than anything else on USA.
So Suits, you brought up Suits, that's still on. Suits is the second best rated show on the network, and it gets a 0.6 for its hour. Just so the lowest rate you get ratings for Raw is like 1.1. And that's in key demos. So they're not in any trouble being canceled. I know a lot of people want that to be 2 hours. Raw won't be 2 hours until it gets way worse.
They want more. I mean, they added them 2 more hours. Like, USA is basically using WWE programming to fill hours in their weekly schedule where they can concentrate on trying to get a new show over on a Wednesday or on a Tuesday without having to worry about what they're going to put on Thursday or put on Monday. I kind of think they maybe should have kept SmackDown on Friday because it doesn't really seem like the audience has grown at all on Thursday because WWE's audience has gotten much older, and WWE is more of like a Chicago Blue or whatever.
Which is funny because you would think that there would be higher ratings on Thursday than Friday, but there's been like virtually no change in the ratings. I think they've actually gone down this many Thursdays, which is really amazing when you think about
it. Yeah, because WWE's audience is more of like the older, the people who watch cop shows and watch NCIS.
That's the NCIS LA, man. It's important. Or I don't know which one's on Thursday, to be honest. Nothing right now. Football's on, but I think...
Yeah, they're having to go up against NCIS's and then football, and that's not good for WWE based on their demos. They're not getting kids to watch anymore as much as they did in other eras.
Which is funny because their product is supposed to be aimed towards kids, but that's not what the ratings are showing.
Well, is it really? I mean, think about how many times you're on WWE and they reference something from like 20 years ago.
It's for everyone. It's loved by young and old and women and males, and they
which
have
means it's for nobody.
And, yeah.
If you're aiming for everybody, you're really aiming for nobody.
Yeah.
That's kind of the problem. And in 2015, you have to aim for a niche and you have to go for it. And the fact that you can't, me especially, I'm going to pretend I'm in the States because it's way easier to talk about over-the-top stuff. Thanks, fucking bell. But say I wanted to cancel my cable, and I was a big Giant Rock fan. Look at me, I love the John Cena man. He's great.
I'm fearless,
and I'm unstable. Well, that part's actually true. But anyway, so say I wanted to cancel cable, but I'm a huge Rock fan. How am I supposed to get Raw online? And the fact that they can't do that, or there's not a way to watch stuff online or over the top service, is probably not helping them either.
Well, I mean, to find a way
that that's where young people are going is to streaming services.
Yeah, I mean, you could find a way to watch Raw. I mean, not legally, but you could find a way eventually.
Well, that's going to help them with money.
Yeah. It does. I mean, and when you think about what kids are watching, it's like, so many parents are having their kids just like, oh, here's your Netflix account with your settings, and here's your kid shows, because Netflix has a ton of kid shows on it, and it's like, here's your Prime account with the settings set up for you to watch your kid shows, and it's like kids want to just put on what they want to watch. That if they want to come home from school and go, hey, I want to watch this thing, I want to watch this cartoon that I like, They don't want to sit around waiting for, like, oh, 5 o'clock is here, now I can watch the show I like.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how kids are being raised to consume media.
Mm-hmm.
So WWE's kind of like the last of an old style of, well, you tune in at 8 o'clock and the show starts, and then you tune out at 11:05 or whatever, and that's when the show ends. And if you don't watch it then, then tough tit.
Or if you're here at midnight, which is why, another reason why I don't watch Raw very often.
Or, you know, Monday night, an hour and a half version on Hulu.
But I mean,
that's
what WWE Network was designed to be, I think, because, I mean, if you put Raw on there, then that would be true, but then again, WWE makes so much money on that third hour of Raw, I mean, that would be really, really, really hard to do.
I think that's the long-term move where it's
going. Yeah.
And I think the whole impetus behind the network was the TV deal they made before this recent one. Nobody was interested in WWE at all.
Mm-hmm.
And Vince was ready for, all right, we're going to get a rights fee increase, and there was nothing. And, I mean, people talked about there not being as much interest this last go-around, but they still got a decent rights increase. It just wasn't as big as what other sports networks or sports leagues have gotten.
But, yeah, which I didn't think they would get anything, to be honest. But.
Yeah, I mean, when you start looking at the crazy numbers that sports have gotten that are completely insane, and, like, nobody watches half of these things. That's a whole different thing. One day I'm going to do the rant on sports leagues, and maybe, you know, I got it all ready to go. Because nobody watches Major League Baseball, and they're getting a ton of money for no one to watch them. Just lost my train of thought. The last TV rights before the current rights deal. Nobody was interested, and it was kind of touch and go about whether they'd end up back in USA for a little bit. I mean, obviously they ended up still there.
Yeah.
But they were trying to talk to, like, WGN, which, if you're losing your TV deal, you always go talk to WGN. I've noticed that. TNA always talks to WGN and never ends up there. Jarrett, Planet Jarrett is always asking. Global Jarrett's always talking to WGN and never ending up there. But Vince got scared because he's like, oh shit, I didn't realize this was the TV world where, like, I have this hugely rated show and I might be sitting out there. We need to get something ready in case this happens. And that was when the network, the whole beginning of talks of how do we set up a network started. Because we need to have something to put Raw on if Doomsday happens. Because, you know, I mean, the history of wrestling companies, we've seen mighty, mighty wrestling companies go down without TV.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was like, let's get something ready in case that happens so that we're not dead in the water.
I mean, we could transition this into TNA talk if you want, because that's the situation they're facing again.
Yeah. I mean, there's just nothing that's ever going to happen there, and you hate... I've heard that for so many years. People go, well, you gotta root for TNA to exist so people can get work. And it's like, do I really? Because almost all these guys could go on the indies and make more money.
Yeah,
they'd have to hustle. They'd have to hustle more, but they'll make more money.
Plus, this is a company that's never learned from their mistakes, ever. I mean, every week you see something that just makes you shake your head because it's like, you know, no other company could be like TNA the way they've done business. And I mean, look, this is gonna sound mean, but I mean, they've kind of deserved what they've gotten for so many years because they've never learned from their mistakes. I mean, even with this Destination America stuff, I mean, they were sending out emails like bashing the head of Discovery, and I'm like, you really think that's not gonna like affect you? What's gonna happen to you? I mean, just.
And they chose that network according to their own... I mean, yeah, they might be just full of shit and trying to spin things, but their story that they're sticking to is that they had an offer, again, I just mentioned them, with WGN or Destination America, and they chose Destination America. Which, if that's true, and not just some spin, they are even dumber than I could have ever thought they were.
I'm surprised they even got a TV deal. So I think that is spin.
Well, I wasn't surprised when they left Spike that they'd get something, because they had drawn 1 million people for a while. Like, I wasn't shocked that some, like, third-tier network would give them a try. And, you know, they got one to give them a try, but they found, like, the most naive bunch of morons running a television network who didn't know anything and immediately went, oh, shit, this is what it's like? Oh, God.
I think that's because... Your shuffle videos are great.
That's going to be the that's the next thing. We're going to move to India. We're going to be an Indian company. We're going to be Rocka King, because that... It's like they don't even learn from stuff they do that fails. Like, they tried running a company in India, and nobody has enough money to support a company. Like, there's people in India who kind of care about wrestling, but everybody always looks at, like, oh, China has 2 billion people, or India has 1 billion people. Yeah, but if only, like, 1 million of those people even give a crap about wrestling because it's a different culture and they don't have the same likes and dislikes we have, you're only drawing from 1 million people, and if they have no money, oh, guess what? You're not going to make anything.
No. No, I mean, I think that's the idea on Monday, that they're going to announce this new India tour, but, I mean, they can tape TV all they want, but where are they going to air it? I mean, I think the Destination America thing runs out at the end of January, and they're going to be canceled then. And,
and
I don't know how many...
canceled in most of their Discovery over, you know,
yeah, I don't know how many international places they have left. I mean, I think they're still on a challenge in the UK, but in terms of, like, big international deals, I mean, they don't have a lot anymore.
Yeah, Challenge, their ratings on Challenge have plummeted.
Yeah.
Like, really, the whole thing about, I mean, it used to be, like, this joke. It's like, oh, man, TNA's huge in England. It's like, no, Hulk Hogan was big in England. And when they brought in Hulk Hogan, they suddenly got big in England. Because he's an icon of a different, for a wrestling fan of a certain age. And especially in England, that's nostalgia stuff tends to do pretty well there.
Yeah.
And as soon as Hulk Hogan left, well, they stopped doing well in England.
And you also have to wonder, like, just how much impact the lack of a U.S. TV deal. Or, I mean, well, they have a TV deal, but, I mean, Destination America's not in a lot of homes, and I haven't watched Impact since the move. And, I mean, it's just general disinterest, like, everywhere. Like, nobody... I have to be reminded constantly that Bava Glory's tonight. And I look at that card, and I mean, it looks like a great card on paper, but I mean, like, nobody cares. And I think that might be affecting what's going on in the UK, because, I mean, they are popular, and they do big business over there in the UK for their every January, but, I mean, the interest in TNA is at all-time low. And, I mean, it's not going to get better.
And their roster is kind of pathetic.
What are you talking about? They have Shira. He does the Shira Shuffle. The only reason I keep bringing him up is because that's the only person I know. What is he, the Mountain Championship? What the fuck? Like, what?
It's like, I think Bobby Roode or Bobby Lashley has it.
What is it?
It's
why
like
do they have a title named after someone not in the company?
Last time I watched a King of the Mountain title match, it can only be defended in a King of the Mountain match. And
well,
it's like a multi-man kind of thing. But I don't know what they're doing now, because TNA rules just kind of change whenever a new taping happens.
Well, I watched their last pay-per-view, because I thought it would actually be their last pay-per-view. It's kind of touch and go about whether Bound for Glory would happen. So, and it was like, oh, Jeff Jarrett's in the main event, and that made me feel nostalgic. So it's like, I'll watch that. And, yeah, it was a sad, 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 depressing show.
That was a mess of a match, too.
And it was like, and it was just Jeff Jarrett, like, basically bought his way onto their show so he could, so he could get some free advertising for Global.
And, of course, Dixie said, okay, hey, you know that this wrestling thing that they're taking all your people from and probably your TV? Yeah, do you want to advertise for me? She's like,
they did get his ownership piece. They did get something for it. Like,
yeah,
but now Jeff Jarrett has no ownership in them, so, okay, you got 100% ownership of a pile of shit.
So Jeff Jarrett double wins? I don't know what you point you're trying to make here.
Well, yeah. But they were excited to get rid of him. But, you know, when you look through, like, you look through this Bound for Glory card, does any of y'all have the card open?
I can get it open.
I think that website is down forever. I think it's basically been paid a $9.99 a month to GoDaddy or something. I mean, that's how it goes.
One thing that I found was funny, and I could go to this show because it's in North Carolina. One of the things I found funny is that they were promoting this. This thing's coming from Concord, North Carolina. And if you don't know anything about North Carolina, Concord is a suburb, a pretty large suburb outside of Charlotte. And when you, it's where the big racetrack is, the Charlotte Motor Speedway, which is semi-famous if you're into NASCAR and stuff like that.
No,
but
I'm from Canada.
Yeah, you're from Canada. You probably watch early.
No, so it's better than NASCAR.
We'll argue about that one day.
Yeah, in your face, buddy.
I'm looking at the card, and apparently Bobby Roode and Lashley for the King of the Mountain Championship is just a singles match. So they've already killed off that concept of it being defended in a King of the Mountain match.
The King of the Mountain title means nothing.
It means nothing.
They're promoting it being in Concord, and no one Concord is a separate town. It's Charlotte. And no promoter in the history of promotion would ever go, we're coming to you from Concord. They would all say, we're in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Even if they were in Concord, because Charlotte's the big city that everybody's heard of.
Truth in advertising. I can't believe you told a lie to their loving viewers.
Brad, you've heard of Charlotte, North Carolina, right?
Yes.
You've heard of Charlotte, North Carolina. Brian, you've heard of Charlotte, North Carolina, right?
Yes, I have.
Neil, I haven't even heard of Concord, have you?
No.
Yeah, it's from, that's where that raceway is.
Yeah,
that's Concord. Right.
Sure.
Yeah. And when you're driving through Charlotte, because I lived in Charlotte for a while, you don't even realize you're in a different town. You just take, you get on, like, the loop, the beltway, you pull off of it, and, oh, this is the north side, or this, I can't remember the right. It's the shitty side of Charlotte. And it's like, oh, this is a different town? I had no idea. Like, nobody goes around Concord going, I'm in a different town. But TNA is going to promote, we're in Concord. And,
I have this question for you guys. And, I mean, it's asked every year because they've fallen so much every year. But by this time in 2016, do you see TNA existing?
Yes. TNA will never die. It's going to outlive us all. I say every year. He will never die. Scott Steiner will be the champion.
2015 will be the last full year they spend on this earth.
Like, realistically, I would agree with you, Dan, but at the same time, I kind of have to agree with Brad, too, because there's been so many instances where TNA should have been, like, we go, oh, this is the last show. Like, I mean, everybody thought Bound for Glory last year was the last show, but they somehow managed to survive another year.
Daddy has money.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters.
Well, that and they found a TV deal. I don't know what the relationship is with Dixie and her parents funding this right now, because there's not a lot of money.
Away from the friggin' oil company, what it seems like, the gas company.
Yeah.
You're finding something for her to do.
Yeah.
Like, before TNA, it was her PR company, so that she'd have something else to do.
Mm.
And that led into TNA. I think they're just happy that she's doing something other than ruining the thing that actually makes them money.
Like, I don't know if every bad decision has ever been made by Dixie Carter, is it because of Dixie Carter, but, you know.
Well, I think the issue with TNA is that she's never had the power that she tries to, like, this has all been some elaborate way of pretending that she's an important person, but at no point has she ever been a person. Mm. Like, Dixie doesn't make wrestling decisions, obviously. She has no idea about that, and doesn't even try to claim that she knows about that. But she hasn't had any kind of decisions over the pocketbook in almost a decade. Like, everything has to be run up to Janice and Bob Carter, and people have always blamed that for the reason why the checks take so long to get paid, why it takes so long to make, like, basic decisions, is because you got to run everything by Bob and Janice. They've got to sign off on every single check that gets sent out because they don't trust Dixie to even do that.
Wow.
So, more or less, all Dixie does is talk to networks, but even then, she doesn't do that anymore because they hired a talent agency to do that. So, and the one thing she did when she was, when they did work with Spike, Spike thought she was a dumb shit.
Well, yeah, she hired
Vince Russo. That's the one thing that she had anything to do with. And then the people that she worked with went, oh my god, this retard.
Spike told her not to hire Vince Russo back, and what did she do?
She put him on a secret payroll.
Yes, and if it wasn't for Mike Johnson, I mean, they might still be on Spike TV for all we know.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's so stupid.
Everyone loves a mystery.
TNA is amazing in how dumb it is.
Yeah. Just, God, I mean...
And then, like, they ran off Eric Bischoff, and that was the guy that Spike actually got along with and was happy with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, everything fell apart when they lost Hogan and Bischoff, because... Bischoff was the guy talking to the network that the network trusted.
Yes. Like I said, they deserve everything they get because of their gross incompetence.
And so if they just sold the company to Jarrett and Toby Keith when they had the chance, they could have gotten out of this and gotten some money back. But we couldn't do that because then there's no way for Dixie Carter to save face. And that was what was most important.
But
when you look at this company and what's important to the stakeholders in it, the most important thing is that Dixie Carter looks rich.
Remember when Dixie Carter said she would never be a TV character?
That's everybody
said that was silly. That is literally, and then I'm just like, oh, that's good. And then she was a TV character.
That's what Vince Russo said.
Remember when they were doing an affair angle with AJ Styles and the actress had to be less attractive than Dixie Carter? Because Dixie would lose her mind if there was someone prettier than her.
And then they picked they picked olive oil from the Universal attraction, theme park, whatever.
Yeah, but then quit because she got tired of getting shit on the internet and people finding out what her real job was and harassing her.
Nobody's gonna forget Claire Lynch for those who experienced it.
Well, WWE forgot about her because they did the same angle and then had to drop it after 1 week when everyone started tweeting Claire Lynch. And Claire Lynch may be the biggest angle in TNA history because I think it will live on forever.
Yeah. TNA. What can you do?
Fan of Glory on this weekend.
It's on in a few hours.
Kurt Angle, will he survive his last match, or will they finally manage to kill him?
Pay money for this. Give them. Is it $60?
Let me check.
There's no way it's $60. There's no way. It's got to be $48.99. Something like that.
If they give me $60, good wife's new tonight, I wouldn't do that.
Checking.
Yeah, but this is almost a decade of Kurt Angle being in this company. This is his last batch, I believe, before he rides off into the sunset. Okay.
As he needs to, man.
He's wrestling Eric Young. That major superstar. When you're closing out the career of Kurt Angle in your company, you put him in the ring with Eric Young.
I'm having trouble even finding a place that has this to order.
Well, I also know it's really interesting that the X Division title match is Tigre Uno, the champion, versus TBA, TBA, and TBA.
Woo! TBA is my favorite wrestler, man. He's pretty good. He had that really big match. Oh man, he's just but you know, they already did the gimmick. I mean, he's pretty much just TBA number two, but I don't know, man. It just seems like it's kind of rip off. And you know, he's a rip off of Bacon. Like, you can't just keep doing the same storylines over and over again. It's like, I don't really know how long you can do that for.
Okay, to their credit, Bound for Glory is $40.
To their credit, no one will buy that.
I was expecting $60.
Will it be a thousand
people? Maybe, I don't know. How many people are on TNA? Like, that many? 300.
I doubt they will. They'll all be hitting up First Row to stream it. Those layabouts.
I don't know how this would do.
Be big enough to even get on the stream sites?
That's a good question. It's not relevant anymore. I mean, I forget if I watched the last show. Which one was the last pay per view? Lockdown.
Slammiversary.
Slammiversary. Oh yeah, yeah. I think I watched that. Yeah, I forget. It's TNA.
Yep.
I don't expect a lot of people to buy this for $40.
The tag team title match though looks pretty good. The Wolves, aka the two guys who made the worst career decisions of any two men in modern wrestling.
Yeah.
Versus the guy who used to carry a cane around in WWE and something named Trevor Lee.
I heard Trevor Lee's pretty good though. Like I've heard good things about him.
I don't know him from nobody.
I've never seen him. Yeah, I mean,
yep.
On paper, this looks like a pretty good show, though. I'll give him that. But
I think it is kind of appropriate for closing with Gail Kim versus Awesome Kong. That's kind of appropriate. Your final pay-per-view, possibly. That's kind of the definitive women's feud of TNA's history. And
yeah. They're going to close out with that? I haven't heard that.
Yeah, not closing the show, but they're closing out their history, women's division, I guess. I mean, I'm assuming this is it. So, Brad obviously disagrees and thinks this is going to last another 10 years.
I mean, if we're talking about pay-per-views, maybe, but, I mean, they still have TV through the end of the year, and they'll probably tape in January, and there's also that India thing.
Who is Chris Melendez?
Chris Melendez is the guy with the one leg.
Oh.
The military guy.
So,
They did it.
The fourth match of the show is full of guys I've never heard of or don't remember.
Oh, let me see.
Because I don't know who Eli Drake is. I don't remember. Oh, Tyrus is the Funkasaurus, right?
Yeah.
Yep, wrestling legend.
And then She-Ra Shuffle. And, I vaguely remember Jesse Godders.
Yeah. Eli Drake is like a former WWE developmental guy.
Did he like Cottonwood?
No, it was like Slate Randall. I don't think he was on TV.
That's a stupid name.
Yeah. Most NXT names are, kind of.
Then the aforementioned Kurt Angle Eric Young match. Bobby Roode versus Lashley for something. And then Ethan Carter III defending his prestigious TNA championship against Drew Galloway and Matt Hardy.
And that was like a last minute change because Matt Hardy wasn't in this match until they announced on Impact. and I think Dave said last night on Observer Radio that Jeff Hardy was the referee. Because they've been doing that angle where EC3 won some sort of match that made Jeff Hardy like a servant or an assistant or something like that. So I guess the storyline is that EC3 is going to make Jeff Hardy make him the winner or whatever. But Jeff Hardy turns on him.
Has Jeff healed up from his accident where he traded his title belt for a skateboard and then broke his face or whatever?
As far as I know, yeah. Yeah, I think I just heard recently that he had another injury, but I don't know anything about that.
I feel like Jeff just making up injuries so he doesn't have to work TNA shows.
Yeah. I mean, if there's anybody that still can have a run in WWE, it's Jeff Hardy.
And he's doing the right thing, which is keeping his face off of this thing and helping people forget he works for them. Because sure, and like, no one's going to know he worked for Bound for Glory. Again, only 1,000 people are going to buy this thing.
I wonder how many people are actually going to be there.
That's
a good question.
It's going to die because of the rain. Charlotte's been hammered.
Oh yeah, because of that hurricane or residue.
Yeah, Charlotte's gotten a ton of rain the last day or two.
Not to mention
this could get real sad looking.
Not to mention that Tindy's numbers aren't that good, like rain or shine or whatever, you know. Yeah.
And they've never drawn well, particularly in the Carolinas.
No.
This has never really been a big hotbed of TNA, so.
Well, we'll have to see.
Yeah.
I think think that's pretty much it for this week. We went in on a,
we gotta end on a happier note than TNA fizzling out. Come on, let's get it, guys. Let's go. Let's have something happy.
What do you got news story wise?
Yeah. I think it's gonna be a good show. I think there's gonna be good matches on it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Undertaker's gonna be awesome.
We'll see. I'm done with Raw for a little bit. I might watch opening segments because it's always fun to watch opening segments. I'm pretty much done with Raw for a little while. I think I'm just gonna give it a break and just watch just the live special events.
It's a background noise for me at this point.
Yeah, I hear ya. Play Mario Maker.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they spend so much time. This is the thing I've noticed. Is that they do all those like video packages on the pay-per-views, and you can skip Raw and just watch that and know exactly what the angle is, and
you're
back to date.
That's true.
So I feel like they're doing the packages just for us OTT only watchers.
Yeah.
So that we're always updated when the pay-per-views are, so we stay subscribers without having to watch the TV.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I'm into that, and. Next week is the NXT show. We're gonna have, I think it's their first main event since a women's match, like ever, for WWE. So
that should be really good.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one. 30 minutes of decent women's wrestling. Hopefully, they don't go too far with the.
I'm kind of worried about the Iron Man thing because I've never seen a good Iron Man match. So
it's 30 minutes, so it might be better than the 60-minute version.
Yeah, but. I mean, it's not just the time limit thing. It's the fact that I've always felt like the Iron Man thing kills the drama of what's going on. Because you know it's going to end at this time. So you spend, like, 25 minutes going, well, it's not ending.
Yeah. So,
but they put together a great match in Brooklyn. So hopefully they can top it.
I do want to bring up, what do you think is going to happen with Finn Balor and Samoa Joe? Do you think Joe will turn on Finn, or will Finn turn on Joe, or would we not have a turn?
I think the move is for Finn to turn, because I think we're going to be, like, when he gets done with Joe, it's going to be Hideo coming in, and it's going to be the revelation that Finn is the one who crippled him.
Yes.
I could go with that, yeah. I mean, it seemed like Kevin Owens was the one who did it, because it kind of hinted that.
It kind of always seemed like that was the red herring. It's always felt all along that it's like, yeah, everyone says Kevin Owens did it, but he's like, no, I didn't. And they've never really proven he did it, and then it's going to end up being a babyface who did it.
And also, I assume that since this is WWE, that they wouldn't play into that or go that route. But, I mean, that would be a nice continuity kind of thing with Hideo Itami coming back and trying to figure out who was the one that attacked him.
This isn't WWE. This is NXT, a completely separate promotion. The number two in America.
Yeah.
Yep.
Looking forward. There's some good stuff, but you know, it's the fall winter doldrums before Royal Rumble where nothing really's happening. But hey, we're gonna get a Brock match at a pay per view against his greatest opponent ever. So the final chapter of their conflict.
Maybe.
Probably. I mean, you think they'll do anything after Hell in a Cell with them?
Nah, I think we're good. I think we're done.
Yeah, I think so.
If they do, they'll have to do it at WrestleMania. I mean, that's where everybody thought that was going to happen, but they went ahead and did this.
I mean, it seems like Rock's going to be involved with. I know everyone's saying that Rock's not going to wrestle Brock, but that's based on Rock telling Dave he's not going to wrestle Brock, and what the hell does that mean?
Yeah.
Rock lies to people all the time. I mean, they're building a story, so I don't know. I mean, it seems like Brock and Rock is the money match.
Well, they're
Rock, not so much.
No, Triple H and Rock is where to go. I don't want to see. Brock has one match, and it's the same every time. And it's great, but I think Hunter Rock is the way to go. If Austin's not doing it, Hunter Rock is the way to go. They're going to have a good match. That's what
I'm saying. Yeah, I think they will.
I don't think they will, because The Rock's got to have somebody who can like carry it and have lots of movement, because he's old and has bad cardio now.
Triple H can't do that. Triple H has shitty cardio now.
He did with Taker.
Yeah, I mean, he had great matches with Undertaker. And
Triple H, or Undertaker's got better cardio than Rock does. Like, The Rock gets blown up really quickly.
That's true. I remember the Cena matches.
Like,
yeah.
The Rock has to be in a really special situation to get through a match these days. And I don't think Triple H, at his age, is the right guy for it.
I think, though, that Triple H is a smart enough worker and a smart enough ring general that they'll find a way to make this at least a pretty good match. I mean, I'm not thinking it's going to be like 4.5 stars, but I think it'll be a good
one. It is a Triple H match. They'll do every... The Triple H match has now become the Vince match where they're allowed to do every shortcut to make it good because of reasons, like they did with Sting last year at WrestleMania where they just did every kind of bullshit possible to get through it.
Yeah.
So they could do that, but... I don't know, I feel like Rock and Brock is a bigger marquee money-drawing match. I don't know if Triple H, The Rock's going to sell too many pay-per-views. Because it's a match we've seen when they were both better.
Yeah.
We've only seen The Rock and Brock once. It was 15 years ago.
Yeah, well, it's a while from now, so I'm sure we'll build it up and we'll have tons of time to talk about it later.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, we'll definitely have to go over. We'll talk about the NXT show next week, and we'll have kind of a lot more to do. Next week will be next week will be the video game show. I wanted to talk to make sure they can play WCW games that I will talk about. Yeah, that's right.
Brad the Bastard Brad,
yes.
made us play Nitro and Thunder and Back to the Star.
Yeah, I can't wait to play those.
We were just going to talk about the good ones because, why not talk about good stuff like Revenge? But no, we got to talk about Backstage Assault.
Goldberg is too big for the ring. He needs to fight out. There's going to be a Backstage Assault, too, and we might talk about that as well. Yeah, Backstage Assault is happening. Are you ready? I am. But yeah, that's pretty much going to cut for the show here. Kind of just a little bit of a spitball show, kind of a little less flow than normal, just kind of hanging out. But we'll be in prime video game form next week, and until then, we'll talk to you all next week. So for me, Brad, and Dan, and Brian, we'll see you later.
Bye!